What a week it's been, dear friends. We went from remembering Juneteenth and its celebration of freedom to the Supreme Court's decision restricting freedom and choice to women, transgender, and non-binary persons. What a week it's been. Many of you are now concerned that the empire of death, that insidious force of evil that finds its way, that creeps its way into our structures and organizations, being the civic, political, or religious organization, many of us are concerned that the empire of death might be up to something else. And it might. But it is not the only one that is up to something. Bodies matter. On a day like today, on Sundays, we gather together in physical form to pray and worship a God who became flesh to live among us. An incarnate God with a great appetite for food, deep hunger for relationships, and with an unshakable mission to bring about a new reality where bodies are valued, honored, and when they can experience abundant life. And the gospel reading this morning is about that unshakable mission of God, a God who walked around in this earth, perhaps with sore feet. There are many characters that we find in this gospel reading from Luke 9. We heard of those who eagerly approach Jesus to follow him. And for each one of those would-be disciples, there was a disclosure from Jesus stating the urgency and the cost of following. We all need the kind of reality check from time to time. Christianity has been the religion of empire for so long that we tend to forget that there's a cost in being a disciple. We're used to having our places of belonging, our families, our country, our churches, our political affiliations, our civic clubs. It is so easy to grow comfortable with having a place. And it's easy for us also to be molded to fit into the script that is given to us by our country and by our families of origin, even when those scripts are based on wrong ideas of boundaries, boundaries that said who's in and who's out, who's worthy of prosperity and leisure, and who are those doomed to work and suffer for our benefit. Jesus' responses to these followers, these would-be disciples, seem out of character. After all, not long ago, Jesus took his sweet time as he was walking around and helped people on the way. But now there's a heaviness to Jesus' words. There's an urgency. I can almost imagine Jesus walking hastily. And as people approach him, he's not stopping, he's just going. And as these would-be disciples are trying to get Jesus' attention, he turned to his shoulders and he's saying something about foxes and about the dead and about a plow. Something is up with Jesus. In this gospel story, we also hear about James and John, the thunder boys. This disciple has seen many things. They seen Jesus calm the sea. They witnessed Jesus freeing a demon-possessed man. They were around when Jesus performed miracles of healing. And John and James most likely ate from the basket of multiplied bread and fish. And these two with Peter, they contemplated the moment of Jesus' transfiguration in the mountain. James and John have seen amazing things. But none of those things, or at least that we're told, involve Jesus calling fire from on high to consume anyone. And yet that is precisely what they asked Jesus permission to do when they experienced rejection from the Samaritans. What do you think would have happened if Jesus had said yes? I wonder how that scene would have unfolded. Can we bring fire from on high to consume them? Sure, guys, bring it. Bring on the fire down. Are you sure, Jesus? Yeah, go ahead. Call the fire from heaven to consume them. Jesus, and how exactly do we do that? Because we don't know. We were just caught up in the moment. I'm sure that I'm not the only one who've been caught up in the moment, just like John and James in these past days, in these past weeks and months, hoping that God would send fire from on high. And while there is fire among us, because there is fire among us, it is a fire that illuminates the table, a fire that sheds light over the generosity and hospitality of God's table. And when there is fire among us, because there is, it is Holy Spirit fire that empowers us to share God's hospitality in these turbulent times. So we have in this gospel reading, there would be disciples, and we have John and James, and we have Jesus, who is up to something. This is the moment in the Gospel of Luke in which Jesus, or in which we see Jesus' determination toward God's mission. Jesus' face is set to go to Jerusalem. For the following 10 chapters in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus will be on the move. Jesus will be on a journey. Jesus will be moving toward Jerusalem. Before this moment, before he turned his face toward Jerusalem, Jesus had already been preaching and enacting, making possible God's message of good news to the poor, of light to those in the shadows, and liberation to the oppressed. But now it is the time to bring that message to the center of power, where the empire of death had made a dwelling place. Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem, thinking of mañana. And I'm sure you know what mañana means, right? Tomorrow. Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem, thinking of tomorrow. For some, this idea of mañana, of tomorrow, for some, they might be thinking that it is about leaving things for later, a sense of perhaps procrastination, maybe laziness. And there's probably some truth in that. However, I'm reminded by theologian Justo Gonzalez that there's this word that we use, Latino people use, mañana, is also a word that brims with hope. It's a tomorrow of God that manifests a hope that is radically different from the present condition. Tomorrow beckons, tomorrow summons, and it invites, and it demands. The kingdom to which Jesus, the incarnate God with sore feet, this kingdom that Jesus is preaching, is rooted in that sense of mañana, in the tomorrow of God, which finds its way to us here today. The future of God that Jesus has given himself to is about the restoration of creation's goodness and the restoration of the goodness of human lives and the worth and values of human bodies. Jesus' words and actions come from the conviction that God is continuing the creative work of liberation from the structures of evil, the structures of oppression, and the structures of death. God has not stopped creating ways for life to flourish and thrive, and that is good. That is what Jesus is up to. With such urgency that there is no time for any other considerations. He had no time to deal with John's and James' insufferable self-righteous indignation. And he had no time at this moment to wait until people felt free and ready to commit to God's mission. Jesus set his face committed toward Jerusalem to confront the empire of death, trusting and committed to God's mañana, with the intractable certainty that grace and goodness will conquer evil, that life will be triumphant over death, and that the structures of power and control will buckle down under the weight of God's eternal love for all. And friends, right now, God is up to something. God is bringing about a mañana today. A mañana that subverts the structures of power and control. A mañana that surprises the empire of death by bringing about peace, joys, and wholeness today. This God's mañana, this God's tomorrow beckons, summons, invites, and demands our participation in creating and hosting spaces where justice thrives, where bodies are honored and valued, where love and life insist, persist, and eclipse all violence and all hatred. We must not forget that mañana, God's mañana, is breaking in today. And we must not forget that God is up to something, and that is good.